Welcome back, one and all, to another day in the news. Another day with the Damage Report with me, John Arola. And for the first time since I returned not so long ago, I am joined once again by contributor to Rebel HQ, as well as the host of the incredibly fun, don't doubt it for a second, Modern Context podcast, Yasmin Aliyah Khan returns. How's it going, Yas?
It's going very well. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Very glad to have you here. That's the thing that I am glad about. I'm glad that we have a fun rundown as well, but I'm going to be honest with the audience. Not long before we started this thing, my wife sent me a short video clip of my daughter, and now that's all I'm thinking about, and I wish I was with her, or more, I wish she was here. I want to do the show with her strapped to my chest, but my wife won't let me do it, and arguably it's a terrible idea. But if you'd like to see that, give a thumbs up to this video.
I want to see it. You should bring her.
Yeah. That nothing helps an infant sleep like me screaming about Jesse Waters or whatever.
That's comfort. That's her, you know, like that's all she's been hearing. So
she should get used to it. You're supposed to, you know, like make sure that you have a close attachment to your kid. That's who I am. I feel like she should know that.
Let her, she needs to know the earlier the better.
Yeah. Exactly. Anyway, very glad to have you here. Very glad to have all of you out there in the audience for a big day on the Damage Report, not only with this major rundown that we've got going, but also we're mixing things up in our Tier 3 member hangout for our YouTube Tier 3 members. It's happening half an hour after the close of the aftermath. So everybody get ready for that. That's coming up soon. I also wanted to mention this. This is the sort of thing I would normally talk about in the pre-port, but the pre-port's on hiatus right now because of baby. Many people in the audience before I left, but then also while I was on leave, sent gifts like to congratulate me for my daughter. Some were sent to our PO box, some were sent here, some were forwarded to my house. So it's a mix. So I don't have them all. Normally I love to show them off. I can't do that right now, unfortunately. But thank you to everybody. It is incredibly sweet and thoughtful of you to do that. And with the stuffed animals and the outfits and the adorable blankets and people doing knitting and people sending books related to, there's a lot of very thoughtful gifts. So thank you everyone for doing that. You're the best audience in this business. So thank you for that. And with that, why don't we turn, yes, from nice, light, happy things to a very serious story that thankfully is right up your alley. How about that?
Yeah, okay. Can't wait.
Can't wait. Okay, let's transition to this. We're apparently on the precipice, perhaps, of a deal being struck between the leadership of Hamas and Israel, in which dozens of hostages would be turned over from one side to the other in both directions, and accompanied with some fairly significant changes to the status quo of the conflict that is still ongoing. Now, we don't know for sure that this will happen. It's possible that literally while we're live on the show, a deal will be announced. The deal could also fall apart, but we're going to tell you what we currently know, which is it's believed that the ceasefire accompanied with the transfer is coming soon, perhaps to be announced today. The Israeli cabinet is meeting Tuesday evening, local Israeli time, to discuss and vote on the deal. And Benjamin Netanyahu says that he hopes for good news soon in those hostage talks. And if they happen, there could always be changes to what had been previously discussed. But here's what we believe the shape of the deal might be. Two sources said in the first phase of a two-phase deal, Hamas is expected to release 50 Israeli women and children held in Gaza, while Israel is expected to release around 150 Palestinian prisoners, mostly women and minors as well. Some of the Israeli hostages are dual citizens. The release of hostages and prisoners in the first phase of the deal would take place over 4 days of a new ceasefire, a brief, limited ceasefire in Gaza. And as part of the deal, Israel would also allow around 300 aid trucks per day to transit from Egypt into Gaza to bring, you know, fuel and medicine and food and all of those sorts of things. So that's the first phase of it. We have an idea of the second phase as well. But yeah, this is the first time that we're talking about this conflict. I know, you know, you always have your eye on what's going on around the world. So what do you make of this potential hostage deal?
So what they keep saying on the Israeli side is, you know, just give us back our hostages and that things will be solved, things will be better. But as of this morning when I checked, you know, the death toll in Palestine is over 13,000 people. And whenever you see these conflicts pop up around the world, any kind of like war-like conflict, there's really just like a handful of people who are doing something and then thousands of people have to die for that reason, right? So for whatever reason, Hamas took hostages from Israelis, but then 13,000 Palestinians had to die as a result of it. Palestinians who had nothing to do with it. And we've all been on social media for, you know, since October 7th. We've all seen all of the rhetoric, all of everything that could possibly have been said about this conflict has been said and continues to be said. You know, everything from blaming the Palestinians for what Hamas is doing because supposedly they voted them into power, which is kind of in and of itself a misnomer. That is a misrepresentation of what happened in Palestine. But you have Benjamin Netanyahu, who's also saying, you know what, maybe we can have a ceasefire. Maybe we will let aid into Gaza, which is crazy that the guy who's ordering all of these raids and bombs and things like this on the Palestinian people also has the authority to deny or grant them access to aid. So it really, there is a power imbalance. However you look at it, you can say that it's justified if that's how you feel. But a lot of people around the world really don't feel like that. We are happy to see hostages released from either side. Nobody likes the idea of hostages. The ceasefire needs to happen. It can't happen sooner.
Yeah, 100%. A great point you alluded to, like the saying they voted for Hamas it's like a way that you can effectively lie by sort of quasi technically telling the truth. It's just not accurate. If we can't go through it all again, we've talked about it before, but everyone watching this, you know, check out Yaz's content. And also John Oliver has a great episode on the leadership of Hamas and Israel that breaks down all of that. But yeah, I agree. It is weird that the power imbalance infests every single aspect of this situation. So that is 100% true. Any sort of deal that results in hostages and prisoners being, sent back and forth, obviously is a good thing. We want every single one of those hostages to be released. And I know many people agree. Like we know that the taking of the hostages 100% unacceptable. There is no defense for it. And then the other side, Israel is going to be releasing prisoners. 150 Palestinian prisoners, mostly women and minors. And when you hear that, I would love to be able to provide more details about what that is, because perhaps every one of those prisoners is justified to be a prisoner. But I don't know. I know 150 women and minors that are being held. That seems a little bit weird too. Anyway, hopefully there will be this exchange. That would be great. And as I alluded to, that would be the first of two phases. So in the second phase, Hamas could release up to another 50 Israeli women, children, and elderly people in return for Israel extending the ceasefire by several more days. Israel would also release at about the same 3-to-1 ratio prisoners to hostages. So look, it is impossible to say. Many people have speculated that there is no point in doing any sort of deal or any sort of ceasefire with Hamas because Hamas cannot be trusted. And certainly they're a horrific organization that's done terrible things. So it's not that you don't have reason to believe that. If we get this first phase, the second phase, we will then have further evidence of to what extent they are abiding by the conditions of that. They and the Israeli government, by the way, both have committed heinous acts. And so coming out of that, we will have more information, and perhaps both of those sides will have more information about whether it could be built on. And perhaps there could be even more, that we could get closer to all of the hostages being released in exchange for a longer ceasefire. The issue is that we don't know that one or both sides won't violate the terms of the deal, or even if they do not, that it will be presented as them violating the terms of the deal. Because I will remind everyone, we're trying to give you limited to the most accurate, specific, and limited information that we have. But this is a conflict that from the very beginning has been the source of almost unprecedented historic levels of misinformation. And virtually everything you read, particularly on social media, needs to be taken with massive grains of salt, because there are so many people with vested ideological and political interests that are fully willing to enthusiastically lie about what is going on and misrepresent the nature of the conflict, the nature of particular acts inside of the conflict. So everybody bear that in mind as we wait to see if this deal will actually happen. Yes.
Yeah. And that's what is so confusing about all of this is, you know, everybody kind of naturally will pick a side for things, but most people, I think, just really want to know what is going on. You need to have the facts in order to form a educated and informed opinion. And right now, those facts are very, very difficult to come by. We can see certain things with our own eyes, but we don't know necessarily who's doing what, who these people are. We've seen the Israeli government showing images of Gaza and saying these are Israelis, things like that. We're seeing that happen. I think something interesting that did happen 20 years ago on September 11th here in the US, the world kind of was changing at that time, right? For the first time, you know, we weren't going to war necessarily with a country. We didn't go to war with, you know, Afghanistan or anything like that. We went to war with terrorists. And these terrorists operate within countries, sometimes across borders, and they're not part of the government. So you can't declare war on a government that isn't really a government, right? And with Hamas, we're kind of seeing that. Right now, they are running the Palestinian government. They are the ones who are technically in charge. But the Palestinian people, they were kind of duped whenever they first did, you know, elect Hamas into government. They were duped. Hamas has broken promises to them repeatedly, and they don't really function by international law because they operate outside of it. On the Israeli side, we've seen them breaking international law repeatedly, and the international community, while most of them have kind of come down and condemned the Israeli government for what they're doing in Palestine, the United States has not and will not. So going forward, I mean, this feels like a victory as far as like getting people back and getting some kind of semblance of aid and a ceasefire going, but everything is kind of unprecedented as far as how it could possibly proceed from this point.
Yeah, 100%. And That's a great analysis. A reminder to everybody that a significant portion of the entire Palestinian population literally was not alive the last time there were elections, and that the elections were not overwhelming in the favor of, there's a lot of information out there and you should definitely look at it. But I also remind everyone, this is the sort of thing that should not need to be said, but often to shake people out of the biases that they hold without even realizing that they do. I will just remind on both sides, people, if you did not like things that Trump did when he was president and did not feel that they should represent you because you just happen to live in the country that he rules, bear that in mind with Hamas. And also, if you're a conservative, how do you like the idea that everything Biden does gets your stamp of approval because you happen to live within the contiguous territory of the United States while he is president? You definitely don't feel that way. So bear in mind the gap that can exist between a population and those who are the de facto rulers of that territory. Just a reminder, everyone. Super fast question I want to give to you as we await, you know, hopefully breaking news. We'll see if something comes. I saw a number of people talking about this. The post that sort of went viral was from on Instagram from Jamila Jamil, who was sort of questioning the focus on release and transfers of women and children, and sort of said, you know, if we're challenging these gender, you know, norms and tropes and all that, is that a thing that should still be so naturally accepted that obviously you would release the women and children first? My gut is, I just want the hostages to be released. And if this is the way that it has to happen and that makes it easier for it to happen, then I feel like that's sort of baked into the culture a little bit. But what do you think about that attempt to sort of like deconstruct this construct, I guess, under which we think about gender?
Yeah, so I saw that post kind of floating around and I didn't give a whole lot of thought to it because it seemed like I get what she's trying to say, but it also seems like, I guess my gut reaction is what you said, just get the hostages out of there, you know, like just release the people and stop everything that is bad that's happening, right? My first thought wasn't necessarily like the gender issue as far as like women and children, but this goes back to, you know, the Titanic, you know, get all the women and children into the lifeboats and the men were mad about it. So I don't really see a distinction there. I get why there's a distinction, I guess, or at least historically why there has been. Those ideas and norms seem to be changing these days. And, you know, I wouldn't want any man that I love to be left behind. So
100%. Yeah. Some of it, I think certainly arguments could be made, you know, returning the elderly are the least capable of, you know, withstanding the harsh conditions of being a hostage. Children, similarly, also children are to an even greater extent than other civilians innocent of any culpability for the actions of a government that they literally cannot control. You could get into an analysis of how generally men have had a stranglehold on political and military power and strategy. So in theory, they're more responsible for it. That's a long conversation.
We have historically, you don't really seem to have a problem sacrificing men during times of war, right? It's only recently that women have been invited into the military. So maybe it all kind of goes back to that. And today things are a little different. We do have women in the military. So volunteer. Yeah,
100%. Yes. I'm sorry if Tucker Carlson is watching and it annoys him for you to remind him of that. But yes, they do serve in all branches of the military. Okay, with that said, we're going to lighten things up here in the first. You know, actually, we're going to take a brief first break, I think. because there's a huge gap between the seriousness of that story and the nonsense we're to get into. So we're going to take our first break. If you're just joining us, hit the like button, send us your comments. We'll reply to them and then we'll be back after this.
Yesterday was Joe Biden's birthday. He is officially the oldest person to ever hold a job.
That really snuck up on me.
And take a look at this. That bonfire right there is something that they posted. And it says, thanks for the birthday, well wishes today, everybody. Turns out on your 146th birthday, you're run out of space.
It's such a weird thing to say.
Well, he's
weird.
Making fun of it. He is. And it's a real issue for the American public right now.
Yeah,
right? So I don't think he takes it seriously at all.
Lighten up, you Buzz Killingtons. It's just a joke. Oh, can you imagine having to wake up and sit at that couch and be like, what am I supposed to pretend to care about? Oh, there's a cake. Cake's on fire. That is really uncaring. People have serious concerns. Yes, people have concerns. We've talked about it. They've talked about it. We're going to talk about it in just a minute. But that image was a joke. And I think not a bad one. I think he's acknowledging people's concerns. He's exaggerating a little bit. Yaz, what do you think?
I thought it was fine. I don't know. Like if I have to be mad about everything, if I've had to be mad about a cake, I just don't have the energy for it, you know? And He knows he's old. What do they want him to do about it at this point? He's not taking it seriously. What should he be doing? I don't know. I don't know what they want.
Yeah,
and the cake, I've seen cakes like that where they just put like 1,000 candles and all the flames converge into it's very cool and very scary.
Very cool, very scary. I don't know what they want to do. Like the dude is drinking as much adrenochrome as he can. They're draining babies of their vital hormones. What more could he do? He's using the secret deep state regenerative chambers that you get in and it renews your DNA. That's all the dude can do.
Has he been cloned already or no?
What's that?
Has he been cloned already or no?
Well, I think the lizard that his DNA was based on has also been cloned as a backup just in case. And it's partly robotic anyway, so it's a cyborg lizard. Okay. I also just want to say, this is a small thing. Maybe I'm being pedantic or whatever. But when Ducey is like, it's his birthday. He's now officially the oldest person to hold office. Yeah, that's how age works. He was yesterday too. I'm pretty sure. Like, and tomorrow he will still be the oldest because he's president. Anyway, here's more whining and complaining.
Of course, reporters, when all this comes out about his birthday, it gives reporters an opportunity to talk about, is he prepared to run for 4 more years or be president for 4 more years? And there's that Operation Bubble Wrap we were talking about yesterday. More's come out about it. People close to Biden reportedly push him to replace his formal shoes, right, the ones that y'all all have on, and because of risk of falling, and wear some more comfortable shoes. Walk shorter distances, right, while you're on camera.
You know, it blamed his stiff gait on the fact that, you know, the way he walks, that he broke his foot playing with his dog a couple of years ago. That's the cover story.
There's always an excuse.
Right.
Is this the same dog that attacks everyone?
No. That was 2 dogs.
Yeah, that was 2 dogs ago. They both attacked people.
Yeah. They're all bad dogs. By the way, if Donald Trump had a dog that was viciously attacking people constantly, every single Trumper in the country would think that that was the coolest thing that had ever happened. That's what alphas do. They have vicious attack dogs. But when it's Biden, suddenly it's a bad thing. Okay. So that's where they get into a little bit of the substance. Yeah. So they're saying he's old. We all know that. And they're referencing a report that came out, I believe, in the Washington Post just yesterday, about some of the disagreement amongst aides of how to deal with the perception and reality of his age. So some are saying we got to get him out there more to reassure people that he's young and he can ride a bike or whatever. And then others have this Operation Bubble Wrap, I think they're calling it, where you try to protect his image by not having him do certain things. So the like making fun of like him for having a joke about his like birthday cake, I think is stupid. There's perhaps more of an opening for honest critique of this Operation Bubble Wrap. I'm not sure if you were familiar with that article, but what do you make of what's being reported?
Yeah, I was just looking at it just now, but you know, it kind of puts everything into perspective how much of the modern political system is really just PR and marketing and just getting, you know, presenting an image, right? Is he running the country effectively? Is he not running the country effectively? Those are the things that actually should matter. And image matters because unfortunately we are a democracy and we have people voting and people If they're less educated about the issues, which is understandable because a lot of these issues are very complicated and they require a lot of time and education to really understand them, most people are going to vote based on these image-based metrics, right? Mm-hmm. If they look at Joe Biden and they see him as a strong, capable, older man, then they might be more inclined to vote for him, or they wouldn't feel as hesitant to do so, despite the fact that he is now 81 years old, which is very, very old for, you know, to be running the country at such a high level, you know, a country that is the United States on top of everything, you know, a country that is so involved in all these international issues, especially what's going on currently in Israel and Palestine. Yeah, yeah. So there are legitimate reasons to be concerned for his age, for his health, for his general well-being, both physical and mental, right? Like there are legitimate concerns there and those should be dealt with and addressed. But I think I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but his opponent, I am getting ahead of myself. I'll let you take over.
Oh, we're definitely gonna get into what you're thinking about there. And by the way, full transparency for some of the audience who might not know where I stand on this. I've been gone for 3 months. Maybe you don't know who I am. I'm John. Hi, everybody. I do think he should step down, not purely because he's 81 years old, but I do think it makes it harder for him to turn around his image to, you know, convince people of what he's done as president, what he's going to do. I do think that he should step down. But I think it's kind of hilarious for them, like in this glass house, to be like, look at, they're protecting Biden. They're not going to let him show how old he is. Question to the Fox and Friends hosts. Where's Trump in all those debates? Where's he at? Why isn't he defending his reputation? Why is he only doing incredibly friendly interviews with people who will never challenge him on anything and doing rallies surrounded by his most enthusiastic and deranged fans? That is Operation Bubble Wrap. And he's not holding up well even within that bubble wrap. As we're going to get into, the dude's brain is leaking out of his ears at every one of these rallies. So glass houses, maybe watch your own boy. And we on our side can put pressure on Biden to perhaps step down. Donald Trump has once again released a doctor's note attesting to his like virile, vigorous fitness. Bruce Aaronwald is his doctor now, and probably a great doctor. And here's the letter. I just want to mention a few of the specifics from here. So it talks about screenings and preventative health maintenance. His overall health is excellent. His physical exams were well within the normal range, and his cognitive exams were exceptional. He remains well within normal limits and was even more favorable than prior testing. Perhaps because of weight reduction, which I believe people do think that he has lost some weight. So I will even give Trump that. He has lost some weight. His cardiovascular, blah, 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 really good. Cancer screening, everything. And thanks to all this, he will continue to enjoy a healthy, active lifestyle for years to come. The active part is a joke. There's no way that's going to happen. But I do agree that he will be here for many years, not because of his commitment to diet and exercise, but because him being around for a long time is the worst possible outcome. So you can bet your bottom dollar on it. But anyway, that letter being released by a candidate's doctor should, in a rational world, be able to be just taken whole cloth. Like, yeah, no, that's true. I have a few issues though. So one is, do you remember this? Can we bring up this letter? This is a letter from a Trump doctor about his health from 2015. Dr. Harold Bornstein released it. And in that he said, if elected, Mr. Trump, I can state unequivocally, will be the healthiest individual ever elected to the presidency. He was like 63 years old at that point. But anyway, it talks about how he's in the prime of his health and everything. We later found out by the doctor, he told CNN that Trump was the one who wrote it. He dictated that whole letter. I didn't write that letter. I just made it up as I went along. So are you really going to believe this new guy that Trump has, he's dispensed with all that lying about his health. Now he's ready to come clean and he's been secretly working out in behind the scenes. No, it's ridiculous. I have other critiques that I'll make. But yeah, as I know, you were already thinking about this. So what do you make of this letter? Are you buying any of it?
No, I don't buy any of it. I never bought the first letter. And anyone who did is lying to themselves. I was traveling with family in Europe when Trump came out with those AI. What were they? The sticker things. What are they called? The
NFTs?
Yeah, the NFTs. He came out with all of his Trump NFTs and he was like jacked and he was like in all these super hyper masculine scenarios and pictures and images of him. And my German cousin, who was like, I don't know, like 9 or something, he couldn't stop laughing because it was so ridiculous. I don't know why these people need to have this fictional image of this guy just so they can get behind him, especially when they know that it's fictional. Anyone can look at Donald Trump and see that maybe he's not the healthiest guy. I get that it's all relative. Everything is subjective. I get that. But every time I see him, I just want him to drink some water. You know, I feel like I just want to give him some water. So, and that's really the nicest thing I can say.
100%. Yeah, I just, it's ridiculous. Like, and it doesn't matter. I just, as an outside observer, I just don't understand. Like, they love this idea that he's jacked, that he has a six pack. Why didn't he just exercise? He wasn't president for years. He has the time and the resources. He could hire every Marvel fitness trainer that exists. He could have gotten jacked. He could have been that fascist conception of the Uberman or what. Like, he could have actually done that. Why didn't he do that? Why do that? Other than Joe Rogan, all of these supposed alpha male right wing crypto fascists are little weenies. And I don't understand it. They obsess over the concept of masculinity. And then they just choose, I mean, it's great, but I'm not going to do it. It's really exhausting to get up from the couch. I will never understand that. It doesn't matter, but it's weird. And a few other things that are weird that I want to throw out to help you analyze this letter from the doctor. I will remind you that Donald Trump literally thinks that exercise will kill you. And no, I don't mean that he thinks you'll get injured in CrossFit. He believes that a person, like a battery, is born with a finite amount of energy, and that when you exercise, you deplete that energy, which cannot come back, and you die when it's empty. Definitely ensuring that he must be a very vigorous and active lover, by the way, but it's just, it's a nonsensical way to think about the world. He's like a weirdo quack scientist from Victorian England. So that's true. That's just the body, though. Maybe we
shouldn't
care. What
does he think the sun does? What does he think of the sun? That's what I want to know.
He's curious about it. I know that because during the eclipse, he stared directly at it.
He couldn't stop looking at it. Yeah, no, he loved it.
It is very bright. And look, I will grant everyone who's like, we shouldn't care about people's bodies. They're the president. That's not what matters. And I agree. I think that the brain is much more important. So I'll just remind everyone that recently in his public appearances, he has demonstrated us that he thinks that Obama is president. He's mixing up the leaders of China and North Korea. He has no idea what city he's in at any given time. He has taken to ranting about donuts. That's the only industry he can come up with when trying to come up with an example. And this is all coming literally years after a little incident that I'm going to remind you of. Here's a throwback to an earlier era of the Damage Report.
I said, is there some kind of a test, an acuity test? And he said, there actually is, and he named it, whatever it might be. And it was 30 or 35 questions. The first questions are very easy. The last questions are much more difficult, like a memory question. It's like you'll go person, woman, man, camera, TV. So they say, could you repeat that? So I said, yeah. So it's person, woman, man, camera, TV. Okay, that's very good. If you get it in order, you get extra points. Okay, now he's asking you other questions. And then 10 minutes, 15, 20 minutes later, they say, remember the first question? Not the first, but the 10th question? Give us that again. Can you do that again? And you go person, woman, man, camera, TV. If you get it in order, you get extra points. They said, nobody gets it in order. It's actually not that easy. But for me, it was easy. And that's not an easy question.
Yeah, it is, though. I mean, look, God, there are so many moments that he should not have been able to get past. But the idea that he said all that and that hack interviewing him has to pretend that, yeah, no, that is very hard. If you can remember that stuff, then clearly you're some sort of genius or something. And his fans had no problem with any of that. That guy is out of his GD mind. And so the idea that you're going to put together this little doctor's letter and that's going to reassure us that you're in great physical and mental health, get out of here with that. Anyway, any final thoughts? Yes.
Yeah, it's very sad that he's so proud of the fact that he passed the dementia test. Like, that's a very standard dementia test. And he was talking about it, he was like, oh, I had to like put the numbers on the clock or something. Like it's ridiculous that he is presenting all this publicly to people as evidence of his mental acuity, of his mental prowess, right? Of his giant brain or whatever. And everyone knows what that test is that he was given, this test that he's bragging about passing. It doesn't make him look better that he's bragging about passing this particular test. So good for him for, you know, being of sound-ish mind, I guess, but it's really not like we're going to need more from you if you're wanting to be the president of the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. I would hope.
The bar is very low.
Incredibly low. I say that, but then can you all remember the order? I bet you can't. It's pretty hard. You get extra points if you get it in order. Do you remember all five? Elon Musk's lawsuit against Media Matters is here, and as predicted, it's weak as hell. It's available online if you want to take a look at it. And as an immediate indication of how weak of a lawsuit it is, you'll notice that Elon Musk, who has a number of different legal firms that represent him in his many lawsuits, are not involved in this because it's going to get laughed out of court. And that's going to happen for a couple of different reasons. So the first is that he is saying, how dare Media Matters say that we put ads next to anti-Semitic and hateful content? And in the lawsuit, he says that they did. They did that. That happened. Now he goes on to say that it didn't happen as much as they would imply that it does, or they had to only follow certain people to make it happen. But he confirms the core argument from Media Matters, which seems to me, as a person who's admittedly not a lawyer, although I am on season 6 of Suits, seems like it would undercut your argument just a little bit. But honestly, I think there's a bigger thing undercutting it. And it's something that we also predicted on the show. It has to do with this section right here. So his core, like, sort of damage that he's claiming is that advertisers have left Twitter thanks to what Media Matters posted. And so he put this up and saying, after the publication of the false smear, advertisers pulled their ads from the site, which, as Media Matters admits, only happened after it reported that X was placing ads alongside white nationalist and pro-Nazi content, which he has already confirmed in this lawsuit they did do. Included in these companies, which all referenced anti-Semitic content in their withdrawal from X, are blah, blah, blah. He goes through and he lists all the companies. Here's the issue. Saying that it happened after the Media Matters article is not saying that it happened because of the Media Matters article. And if the companies, which did admittedly say that anti-Semitic content is the reason they're pulling their ads, there are potentially other explanations that still fit in with that. I have one example. If we could go to this graphic, it's when Elon Musk himself was shouting from the rooftops anti-Semitic conspiracy theories. That was happening at the same time. And it seems like it is going to be very hard for him to argue that this is all due to Media Matters activity, particularly when he is confirming that their report was accurate. And on top of that comment, he's reinstated numerous white nationalists and anti-Semites to X. He's even shared ad revenue with them, helping them profit from their hateful content. They've put so many people back on. A pro-Hitler and Holocaust denier account said it was paid $3,000 from Twitter. And so, like, this is going to be such a difficult thing to prove. First of all, it seems utterly frivolous, and why it would be picked up like in a state like Texas of all states. There's going to be a lot of issues in terms of that. But with his own enthusiastic embrace of anti-Semites, I think that this lawsuit could end up doing more damage to him because he's opening himself up to discovery. He's opening himself up potentially to his communications being revealed. I'm sure that he thinks that like in every other area of his life, his money is going to get him out of this scot-free. But this is an area where he has already given the other side so much ammunition that I think he is really setting himself up for a major fall. What do you think?
Yeah, so this kind of reminds me of what they're saying is probably the Trump strategy right now with some of his lawsuits that he's fighting. Is it's more of a PR campaign than it is actually like they think that they're going to win this lawsuit. Maybe I think you're right that Elon thinks that he's insulated from a lot of things because he has so much money. And he apparently doesn't care about losing money because he voluntarily lost like $44 billion, right? $1 million.
Billion.
Billy, right? Yeah.
For Twitter, yes, it's billion.
Yes, yeah. So I think it's interesting because at this point, he's really trying to align himself with a certain type of person. It doesn't take Media Matters or any kind of, you know, investigative journalistic outlet to go on Twitter and see that it is very anti-Semitic, that it does have a lot of racism on there. It's a very unpleasant platform to be on, right? Everyone can see it for themselves. And understandably, a lot of people have left the platform because of it, including advertisers. So now he might be just trying to align himself with a certain type of person. And in their minds, you know, something like this, like Elon Musk suing Media Matters over this article, he looks like a strong man. He's more, becomes more mythical in their eyes, more legendary. So maybe, I'm not saying that's what's happening, but it could be.
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, there is nothing he can do that will get through to these people because they have fully drank the Kool-Aid. They will eagerly gobble up any like PR work that he does. Any whatever the brand Elon Musk wants himself to be, that's what they will take. It doesn't matter how many stupid things he says, how many predictions he makes that are utterly wrong, how many times he lies about things his corporations are going to do when he says that there's going to be no COVID cases like 4 months into the pandemic. There's nothing he can do that will get them to understand how horrid and dishonest and, you know, smooth brained he actually is. So he has that going for him at the very least. But I don't know that this, what I'm about to read, will become a part of the lawsuit, but I do think that while I can say that what he said was anti-Semitic, that doesn't make it anti-Semitic. You don't have to trust me. You can perhaps trust, the white nationalists and the neo-Nazis who love what he said. So Nick Fuentes said that the post Musk agreed to is what we were saying in Charlottesville. This is like when the Charlottesville marchers said, Jews will not replace us. That's like a summary of that. This is the richest man in the world and one of the top Twitter users casually drawing a link between Jewish influence and anti-white hatred. He said that this is evidence that they're going mainstream. White nationalist Vincent James Fox said Musk is casually aiding and naming them on Twitter. The CEO of Gab said that this is evidence in part that Jews are the ones pushing anti-white hatred and of how far the Overton window is shifted to the right. Anti-Semitic YouTuber Keith Wood said Musk's post is evidence of how much progress is being made normalizing our ideas lately. White nationalist Patrick Casey said, I like what I'm seeing from Elon Musk. He's really pushing the envelope. And Alex Jones said that Musk's post is the truth. 4chan users, by the way, these are just randos, but their quote is saying Musk is our guy and is, quote, awakened to the Juden menace, which just, ew. Anyway, look, I don't need to tell you who he's appealing to. The people he's appealing to are telling you how appealing he has become. This is who he is. He's going to have to go into court and he's going to have to show how it's all down to Media Matters. It's not down to his enthusiastic embrace of anti-Semitism, racism, homophobia, transphobia, and all that stuff. And I don't know how he is going to prove why these corporations made the advertising strategy changes that they've made, particularly when many of them had already pulled their ads a year earlier. Some of them came back, but canceling and restarting advertising is just a thing that businesses do. Proving that Media Matters is responsible for it is a massive ask, and I don't think he has a chance of doing it. Anyway, with that said, we do need to take our last break of the hour. So more important news to get to after this. Yesterday was Transgender Day of Remembrance, and President Joe Biden marked the day by paying tribute to the, again, many trans people who have lost their lives due to violence between this and the last Transgender Day of Remembrance. He posted this tweet saying, there is no place for hate or discrimination in America. No one should lose their life simply for being themselves. And unfortunately and tragically, predictably, many have. Many do every single year amidst an increasing amount of focus from the right on trying to demonize, harass, and inspire violence against, this community. We have earlier this week, sort of in line with the day, Human Rights Campaign putting out a report talking about the epidemic of violence against transgender individuals as well as other members of the LGBTQ community. And they have highlighted the 33 transgender and gender nonconforming people who have been killed between last Transgender Day of Remembrance and this. And in total, since just 2013, 335 transgender and gender nonconforming people. And Every one of the numbers that we're going to show you is absolutely devastating. The yearly numbers are terrible. The overall numbers are just insane. But you also need to know the nature of the violence. So who it actually targets. So 62% of victims of fatal violence are Black transgender women. 85% were people of color. 83% were transgender women. So you can see sort of the way that that breaks down in that particularly biased way. And then this is just devastating. When you think about what each of these numbers, if we could go to graphic 5, represents, it's a chart going back to 2013 of the deaths by year. And there is certainly, there's variation over time, but it also seems to my eye that it is trending up. And you would hope that in a modern society, it would be moving in the opposite direction. But we also know where culturally and politically and ideologically the conversation that the right has been driving over the past few years in regards to transgender individuals. We know what it's like. We know the legislative actions targeting that community and, you know, other people in the LGBTQ community. Why would we be any be surprised at all that there would be so much violence? A pretty significant increase just from last year. Anyway, there's some limited actions that the Democrats have been trying to take at the federal level to pass legislation to protect trans rights. Back in May of this year, there was the Equality Act. Every House Democrat was a co-sponsor of it. It would expand federal protections for LGBT people from discrimination and overturn anti-trans legislation at the state level. The dozens and dozens and dozens of bills that have been proposed and passed in a number of different states. But unfortunately, the Republicans blocked it because, of course, they did. The pro-life party does not want protections that would protect people's lives. They just don't want it because they care more about the hateful people who have made core to their existence, despising the very existence of transgender people, than they do about those transgender people. And so that's the sad place that we're at, you know, as we celebrate or, you know, recognize, note, mark Transgender Day of Remembrance. But Yaz, what do you make of this?
We know that Trump is on trial right now for trying to prove whether or not he was involved in inciting a riot on January 6th, right? And he's saying, no, I didn't do that. I didn't say anything that made this riot happen. Even though anyone can look at the things that he was saying for the years leading up to the riot on January 6th and say, you did this, you know? You influenced large swaths of people across the country. You filled them with hatred. You filled them with fear. And you drove this reaction. But now there's a whole court case trying to prove that his words did have consequences, right? And we see this happen all the time, especially with the right. You know, like they demonize so many different groups of people. And every time they do that, we see murders of attacks on those people. We saw it with the China virus, right? We saw Asian American people all across the country being attacked in the streets, you know, just kind of shamelessly, really, really jarring. We see it with Muslims. We see it with Jewish people. We see all different minority groups feel this. And we're seeing it now with the LGBT community. And they're going out of their way to say, we don't care about that. We see that the deaths are increasing. We're not taking any responsibility because we didn't tell anyone to kill anyone. But we're going to keep spewing all this hatred. We're going to keep othering them. We're going to keep demonizing them. We're going to keep calling them really, really horrible things and accusing them of really, really horrible things. And I wonder if part of the reason why that rhetoric is so pervasive is because I think a lot of people still don't know transgender people in their personal lives. You know, like even me personally, I only know like a handful, you know, but I think a lot of people, they're an easy group to other because so many people live in isolated rural communities, especially Republicans. So they're really just not exposed to a lot of different types of people. That's why they feel so strongly about all these minority groups because they just don't have interaction with them.
Yeah.
And I like to think that if they did have more interaction with them, things would change. Their minds would be open to the fact that these are literal people who are dying, but we don't know that. And right now, this is what we have to deal with.
Yeah, it's a great point. And it really does like remind me of one of the core differences. This is not true of everyone, but I feel pretty comfortable in mapping this out over the political spectrum. Like our side, to greater and lesser extent, tries to have at the core of our value system, the ability and willingness to extend empathy and compassion to people without needing to know them.
Yeah.
Or even know what they're like, to be familiar, but to go into it with that approach. And on the other side, there is a like startling willingness to like enthusiastically hate and fear people without needing to know them, without having to ever interact with them, without having them have any direct impact on their lives, but to still be willing to hold hatred and fear and jealousy and suspicion and misinformation and all that. And of course, there are those who are profiting massively by inspiring that. And we're not going to change it. We can't. You know, I can speculate about the people who have spent, they have missed one day in the last 3 years demonizing trans people on their shows, how they would feel if they saw this. But I know how they would feel. They would feel celebratory. They would like this. And maybe I'm just saying this because, you know, I just had my first child, but I hope someday, and we can't assume that the next generation is going to be better than the one that we have right now, but I wonder how my daughter will view me, and to the extent that she understands what I did in my career, what she'll think about it, what I chose to use my platform for. And I hope for these people that at the very least, they feel cut off, they feel isolated, they feel frozen out by their children, who will utterly despise them for the hatred that they spent their lives spreading, the violence that they inspired. I don't know for sure that that will happen, but I hope at the very least we have that. Okay, really fast. Let's jump quickly into this just because it's too wild not to mention. A pastor and leader of the Philadelphia Moms for Liberty chapter has been exposed as a registered sex offender, which... There's a dark form of irony whenever this pops up, this group that has prided itself on trying to weed out these subversive elements in society that are going for our kids, you know, groups like teachers and stuff. And then within their own ranks, harboring people who have done horrid things. So in this case, it is Philip Fisher Jr., who leads the Center for Universal Divinity in Olney, helps connect the right-wing group with local faith leaders to boost their memberships. He also pleaded guilty back in 2012 to a felony count of aggravated sexual abuse of a 14-year-old boy when he was 25. Was sentenced to 3 years in prison, given credit for spending nearly 20 months in jail awaiting trial. And he said he agreed to plead guilty to get out of jail, where he said he experienced violence from other prisoners. So he is denying sort of the substance of the charges. Take that, you know, for what you will. National spokesperson for Moms for Liberty did not respond to a request for comment. I mean, why would they? Why would you have any sense of responsibility for the people that your group is involved in? I'm not saying they're directly responsible for everyone who's involved in a very large national group, but maybe you could show that you actually care about this by not only focusing on fictional people who are targeting our kids, but maybe acknowledging those who have been proven to be actual predators in the past. In any event, we have more on this that we can get to, but Yaz, what do you make of it?
Yeah, so I actually just did a video for Rebel HQ about this. It's not out yet, but it will be later. And the story is kind of wild. It's kind of crazy, right? He says, yes, I'm a registered sex offender. I'm on the list. You can Google me and that'll come up. And he says to his credit that he never tried to hide it. He just never made a big deal about it. But he does say, I had to plead guilty just to get out of jail because I was in a cult and they basically framed him and they got mad at him for speaking out about some things. And so they framed him and they said that he was doing all kinds of illegal things that he shouldn't have been doing. And they put him in jail and he's pled guilty. And it's a whole story. So that's all I'll say here, but it's very interesting. And then there's the obvious hypocrisy of all of it. But in the video, I do get into like cult-like thinking. I talk about the cult that he was allegedly involved in. It's very interesting stuff.
That sounds fascinating. Everyone should definitely check that out. And I want to remind people that, like I said, I'm way too easy on these people. They're not nationally responsible for every individual. And they're not every part of this movement. They're one part of it, the Moms for Liberty. But it's just, have you noticed a pattern? A bit of a pattern? Anti-grooming Republican resigns after alleged sexual relationship with teen. That's former Texas Representative Brian Slattin, or the QAnon leader who inadvertently outed himself as a groomer, or the different QAnon leader who ran a website where he brushed off concerns about pedophilic content, or the founder of Protect Our Kids First arrested for allegedly downloading child sex abuse material, or the leader of one of the QAnon subreddits initially, the moderators having to step down because of child pornography and all that. Does it feel like maybe there's a little bit of a pattern there, that these people who are so hyper focused on sexualizing kids and then pushing that out on other people who have no interest in doing any of that, so many of them having that hiding in their own closet, I don't know. I've noticed a pattern. I feel like it's something that should be looked into. And that is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour of the show, everyone. But don't worry, all of you. There's more to come in the aftermath, so don't go anywhere. Yaz and I will be back after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.